The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always strongly advised. Good evening and welcome to Down the Garden Path with your hosts, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact us live this evening, send us an email, instudio101@gmail.com. And now, right to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing.
Thank you, and welcome to Down the Garden Path once again this evening. So this is where we discuss down-to-earth tips and advice for your plants, gardens, and landscapes. We think it is important and possible to have great gardens that are low maintenance. I am Joanne Shaw, landscape designer and owner of Down to Earth Landscape Design for the past 10 years. It is currently a design-only business here east of the GTA, serving all of Durham Region. And with me is Matthew Dressing.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening. I am Matthew Dressing, landscape technician, horticultural technician, and avid gardener with years of experience in garden center, landscape construction, landscape maintenance, and a little bit of everything in between.
And a guy that loves double doubles.
That's double right. Doubles.
double Straight doubles. To my heart.
That's right.
Here on Down the Garden Path, each week we enjoy bringing you interesting, relevant, and helpful topics to help you achieve a great garden. We learn right along with you from each other, from our research, or from our guests that join us here. We welcome your questions via social media or emails or calls.
That's right. So thank you for once again joining us down the garden path. This week, we are going to be discussing an exciting topic. Well, kind of exciting, depending. It's dry shade. We all have it, don't we?
We all have it.
Or maybe not everybody has it, but we're discussing dry shade with our guest, Helen Battersby, who will join us in just a little bit. But first, I thought we'd start with a regular segment of what's happening in our garden. What's happening in your garden?
What's happening in our garden? I'm excited to talk about Helen because my garden, which is my grandmother's garden,
right?
I have a big garden in her place, is dry shade.
Ah.
So I'm excited there. What's happening in my garden? We did some of the, we were talking earlier in the year about growing veggies. And we talked about growing vegetables in containers and things. So I harvested my spring plot of potatoes in the bag. They finally died back, gave them a little bit of time dead and recuperating, doing their thickening their skin underneath the soil.
Okay.
And we harvested them. And it was a good harvest. We can make a nice potato salad and we had some nice fist-sized ones, but overall, I found that we didn't get to water them as much. I was a little neglectful at making sure that they were evenly.
Okay, so like the water didn't penetrate.
Right, or we didn't water them deep enough, or we just totally went away for a weekend and totally forgot them. So the potatoes, they came up. They were a little misshapen, and you could see where they kind of stalled out and were looking for some more food or water, so basically, just, you know, making sure that they were evenly moist. They would have had grown a little longer, had it been a little bigger and a little more, and a more even crop.
Okay.
So that was fun and exciting because I've done them did that one in a pot, and it was in one of the potato bags.
Right.
So if you've ever seen those, they're kind of that green vinyl woven vinyl with a little door kind of thing. I was kind of sad and not lots showed up by the door.
Oh, okay.
So it would have been fun to have more of them show up and be nice and big. But they definitely warped the overall container so that you could see there were potatoes growing.
Okay.
So that was lots of fun.
So did you get as many as you were expecting?
No, and I think, again, because it was just, we had let it dry out and we didn't feed it well enough. Just that real inconsistent moisture, I think, was the key that got us growing a little small and stalling them out. So lessons learned. It was my first planting of potatoes ever.
Excellent.
So I am excited really to try it again.
Now, do you think they tasted, like you did use some, so did they taste better than?
Yeah, they did. Just kind of tasted like potatoes.
Oh, okay. So no different than what you bought from
the store?
A little
different. I thought the flesh was nicer, a little more moist for what I got. I mean, again, just with the moisture issue, they could have been a little bit moist, but I did enjoy them. They didn't taste bad by any means, but so that was the potatoes. And other than that, you know, my tomatoes are slowly coming down and things are settling into the August garden and keeping them watered. But other than that, that was my big excitement in the gardens.
Mine is pretty, I mean, I'd say things are kind of in a holding pattern. Hydrangeas are all in bloom now. Mm. The oak leaf hydrangea is completely done because it seemed to bloom early this year. So it's done. Mm. The flowers are all kind of browned already. The only odd thing or little change is in the last week or so, I've had an abundance of grasshoppers. Yeah, and they don't seem to be eating anything. They seem to be all at different sizes. Like, I got really big ones and little baby ones and stuff, and they're kind of flying around and hopping around and everywhere I go, but I don't see any damage or anything. I think my Japanese beetle trap is working. I'm not seeing any, either that or they've all like laid eggs in my garden already or my lawn already. So I'd have to say, you know, things are at a holding pattern. I did go away for a weekend, and all my plants survived while I was away, so that was good. Yeah, so,
Nice. And you had a good trip?
Yes, I had a very good trip. Very good trip. And anything new at the garden center?
At the garden center, fall's coming.
Yes.
Fall's on its way.
So people are keen to get their mums?
People are, yeah. A lot of the planters, they were late to start and really flush out, so some of them are still looking okay. Some of them, if you didn't change them over, they're a little weak looking, but mums and the kales and all the fall plantables are definitely starting to show up. We're always warning, of course, remember mums blow through their cool season plant.
Yes.
So if you do go out and buy them, because I know a lot of the big box stores have lots of them, we've just got a sampling of them. Make sure that the temperature, right, keeping them cool gives them a longer life.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Or be prepared that you're going to have to buy another, you know, and buy them again. That one that you buy now, middle of August in the summer, the 34 degree weather today, is not going to make it till Thanksgiving.
No.
You know, it's just not. So
it's not,
if you're prepared for that and you just want to get something, you know, for the last few weeks of August and beginning of September to give you some bright color, then go for it, knowing that, you know, by the second week of September, you're probably going to have to replace it, maybe switch up the color, you know, then that's fine, you know, especially if it's fairly economical at the big box store.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. So
Other than that, just enjoying the late fall flowering plants. Mm-hmm. I think we mentioned
late
them last
summer,
week.
Yeah.
Thank you. I said late fall, didn't
you
I?
You did, yes.
I got mums in my head.
Yeah.
The late summer, the butterfly bushes, the summer sweets.
Yes.
The hydrangeas, the honeybees are out all over.
Yeah. My coneflowers are doing great. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Nice. Definitely enjoying that.
And like you said, with the Japanese beetles, they're just finally starting to slow down. We'll probably see them, or people will be asking about them for another 3 or so weeks.
Okay.
Because they live about 2 to 3 months. But other than that, these things are starting to slow down. And like you said, kind of just in a holding pattern almost.
Yeah.
And certain things. So,
But for a good reason. So that's good. That it's nice to have so much in bloom right now. So I like that.
It really is.
Yes.
Really is.
Although I have to confess that, which leads us to the topic for tonight of dry shade, is that my dry shade garden is not looking happy. So I'm really looking forward to our topic today, dry shade. There are very many variables, right, dry shade. So it's, to me, it's one of the most challenging areas in the garden. Usually under a large tree canopy or canopies. I have two trees where leaves or needles of the tree prevent rainfall from reaching the ground, and any rain that might make it or any extra watering that we do is fairly soaked up, soaked up fairly quickly, right?
Exactly.
By the tree's feeder roots that are everywhere. And especially if you try to plant, you know you're going to dig up roots like crazy. And as much as we add soil, also many of my clients say, but I've added, 3 inches of soil and 3 inches of compost. But when I go to plant, there's nothing left. And mm-hmm. it's like, because the tree, despite our best intentions, just takes the nutrients. So that's one kind of variable of dry shade. I think that's a big one. You could just have a north facing corner in your yard, under the eaves trough, beside the porch, shaded by a deck in the backyard. These areas can be equally as challenging. Mm-hmm. And especially because I think, especially in the backyard, you want to make those areas functional. Right. You know, you really want to be able to do that. So I've yet to solve this problem for myself or for my clients. And personally, I've planted several shade plants. I just tweeted out a picture of my sad-looking, struggling shade garden just a few minutes ago. So to hop onto Twitter and take a look at that. How about you? I know you garden in your grandmother's shade garden.
Yeah, in Nana's garden. And yeah, she has two very large Norway maples. And every time you go or I go to plant something, yeah, there's just roots everywhere, yes. Right? You just got to etch out that hole and put down a little bit of extra compost around it. And luckily, she loves watering. So she goes out and gives a little bit of extra TLC and
excellent.
Yeah, fights with her trees that she loves with all her heart and gives everybody a little bit of extra water. But yeah.
It's so hard because the trees bring us so much shade and privacy. It's really a balancing act, isn't it?
It is a balancing act, most certainly, most certainly.
So I am really looking forward to Helen's suggestion. So she's going to bring us her top five. So she's going to talk a bit about some more dry shade variables and talk about her five top plant recommendations. So why don't we talk to her after this commercial break? You are listening to Down the Garden Path. I am Joanne Shaw with Matthew Dressing, and we will be right back to talk about dry shade with our guest Helen Battersby here on Reality Radio 101. Does she walk? Does she talk?
Are you wondering why your life isn't moving in the direction that you want it to? Do you ever hear yourself saying, it's like I'm running into walls, or my money flows out as quickly as it comes in? Until about 9 years ago, I used to hear myself say those exact words. I could never figure out what was causing these problems or how to fix them. Well, that's until I started to learn about feng shui and how by applying the principles of it to my home or my office, I could in fact help fix those problems and have my life run smoother. Wow. When you book a feng shui consultation with us at Your Spiritual Connection, we will help you to figure out why things aren't working out in your favor, and we will offer simple solutions to help correct the problems, which will in turn help your life to run smoother.
Contact Trish John of Your Spiritual Connection at 905-391-8801. To book your feng shui consultation today. For more information on any of our upcoming events and workshops, please visit our website at www.yourspiritualconnection.ca. Your Spiritual Connection, helping you to make the connections in your life.
Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your hosts, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing, right here on Reality Radio 101. To get on board, send us an email, instudio101@gmail.com. And now, right back to your hosts of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing.
Hello, everyone. We are back, and you are listening to Down the Garden Path on Reality Radio 101. Thanks for tuning in tonight.
Thanks. Welcome back, everyone. Our guest, so we alluded to it in the opening, our guest today is going to speak about dry shade. So let me tell you a little bit about her. Her name is Helen Battersby, and she's one half of the dynamic duo that blogs with her sister, graphic designer Sarah Battersby, at their award-winning blog, Toronto Gardens. Helen is a freelance copywriter, a volunteer with the Toronto Master Gardeners, and a founding member of a local power walking club. Helen and Sarah also team up as garden coaches for people who love to garden or want to learn how, with their business, Garden Fix. Helen is also a friend and a fellow flinger. If you've heard me talk about the garden blogger flings, Helen, I met her 3 years ago when she actually hosted the Toronto Fling here in Toronto. Mm. So we got to know her then, and then we traveled together in Minneapolis, and then saw each other again in this past fling in Washington. So we are also I call her a fellow flinger. Helen knows a bit about dry shade as she spends a lot of her time at her home in Toronto trying to grow under Norway maples on land that was once the sandy shore of ancient Lake Iroquois. She has an intimate knowledge about what it means to fail and succeed in dry shade. Welcome to the show, Helen.
Thanks very much. You notice I put fail first.
Because, yeah, we all feel that's the one thing about dry shade, isn't it?
That's right. Well, they say that you don't really know a plant until you've killed it at least three times.
That's a good saying.
Yeah, that is a really good saying.
Yeah, and I've also killed many unkillable plants trying to grow them in dry shade, including, are you sitting down, goutweed.
Oh, really?
What?
I have killed goutweed.
Wow.
So, yep, it's definitely a tough situation, and you've already talked a bit about it. I didn't hear what you were saying, but I am, very much conscious of the pros and cons of gardening in a challenging situation like dry shade.
Yeah, and we were just saying there's definitely different variables of dry shade, right?
Right. Well, one thing is you have to estimate how dry it is. Mm-hmm. And why it's dry. And you have to also estimate how shady it is. Mm-hmm. Because if you can adjust the dryness, you can have more sun-tolerant plants. And if you can address the light, make it a little bit light, you can plant more drought-tolerant plants. Mm-hmm. So you have these two little sliding scales that you can dial to have greater success with certain kinds of plants. Okay. And some of them I'm going to cover in my plant rundown.
Excellent, excellent. How is your garden doing this year?
Well, with all of the rain we've been having, this is the kind of, it's a blessing for many kinds of gardens, and dry shade is one of them. Because I haven't had to worry about watering most of the plants, pretty much all summer. And everything is very lush, but then that means that they're used to those kinds of constantly rainy growing conditions. Yeah. And when we do have a few days of heat and dryness, they go, and sink. And I have tried to grow one of the plants that I'm not going to put on my top five list, but it's often recommended for dry shade gardens. And I've seen it in other people's dry shade gardens doing really well, and that is Japanese forest grass, Hakona chloa. I have killed it four times. Mm-hmm. I'm trying number five, and it is one of the first ones to show its stress. Mm-hmm. When things get hot and dry. But hopefully if I get it through the next year or two, it will be here to stay.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think I've had more success for my clients than I have for myself.
It really depends on the growing conditions that people have. But anyway, I have a very root-infested, sandy, as you mentioned, garden. So my garden it leaks when things get wet because it's like gardening on a sieve. And then what moisture is there in the first few inches of soil is sucked up by the thirsty Norway maples who compete with plants in a the surface level, you know, they're very shallow rooted. Mm-hmm. So that's why one of my top plants, which I call the star of dry shade, is big root geranium.
Ooh, okay.
That's geranium macrorhizum. And it is successful because it will make, once it's established, a weed smothering green mulch, essentially, and it's in a very dry area of my garden and has been for decades. And it is very easy to pull out. In other words, it's a kind of densely growing plant that is still easy to contain.
Okay.
It's not the kind that will run rampant over things. You can pull it up really easily, and it because it has fairly woody roots, and that's why they're called big root geranium, mm-hmm. woody, dense roots that sort of sit more on the surface of the soil, it's easy to compete in a rooty, you know, tree rooty situation. So they also have a slight scent. Some people might find it a little pungent, but I find it rather nice. And there are some kids who are neighbors on our street who love to pat it as they go by because it's fuzzy. The leaves are fuzzy. So they really, our front garden is a little bit raised above the sidewalk level. And so it's just at kid eye level. And they pat it and they, you know, it's like their little green pet. And it's also semi-evergreen, so it will stay fairly evergreen. You know, you'll still see leaves on it even in the winter. And then it's quick to leaf out in spring. And if you're lucky and get at least some sun on it, it will have some red leaf color.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So it can really do a lot then, can't it?
Yeah, it is. It's not as colorful as the... there is a geranium boyokovo that has a much daintier, smaller leaf and a much more reliably red in fall. It has the geranium macrorhizum is one of the parents for. So that is a kind of a variable of that. So that's also a good, this is perennial geraniums. They're not the geraniums that you would think of as pelargoniums, zonal geraniums you think of as annuals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one, the star of dry shade geranium macrorhizum, big root geranium.
And Helen, what about the flowering? Does it do much flowering?
Well, yeah, there are flowers. It does make flowers in white. Different cultivars will be white, pale pink, or the more common magenta.
Nice.
And it will flower more profusely if it has a bit more light and a bit more moisture.
Okay.
So sometimes the flowers are just a bonus,
mm-hmm.
but if you really have a problem spot, and I'm saying there are problem spots for which there is no hope,
mm-hmm.
and those troublesome areas underneath, let's say, a very densely needled evergreen,
right,
close to the trunk. Those, because it's a permanent rain shadow, and also the soil tends to be quite shallow because of the root system on the conifer. Those are hard to grow anything in. Mm-hmm. But if you have a circle around a tree, for example, that you wanted to fill in with something, or a sandy bank like mine, then you definitely get the foliage, and you can get the flowers mm-hmm. if you're a lucky camper.
But it sounds like an overall great option, so thank you. Yeah, I think I see why that's number one.
Yeah, number one. Number two in the hit parade is Epimedium, which has different, let's say, common names.
Okay.
And I can't think of any of the common names at the moment, but it will come to me in a minute.
Yeah, is it Barrenwort? Is that one of them?
Barrenwort. Yeah.
Barrenwort,
exactly.
Yes.
You got it. Now, the toughest of them all is Epimedium rubrum, and that's the red Epimedium. And it makes lovely spring flowers. And you see, the great thing about a shady garden, that in spring, if you're gardening under deciduous trees, you have a sunny garden.
Yes.
So plants that get their flowering out of the way early in the year are great choices for a dry shade garden, because they've done their thing. And if you also pick ones that have nice foliage, then you get the spring flowers and then interesting either shapes or colors or patterns or textures of foliage in your dry shade garden. So Epimedium rubrum makes spring flowers. They are red with white, and they come up, they look very delicate. They have almost these little airy fine stems, but they're really quite tough. Again, once you get them established,
okay.
And that means that just after you plant them, probably for the first year or two, you are going to have to pay a little extra attention to watering.
Okay.
And, you know, because you want them to develop a good, deep root system. And by watering, I don't mean just sort of sprinkling there with a glass of wine.
Yes.
After work. You know, you want a nice, long, deep drink of water to encourage the roots to go deep. So Epimedium's a great choice. There's other Epimediums are Sulphurium, which has sulfur-colored yellow flowers. And there's another one that has the cultivar name Fronleiten. I think it's Spring Light. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
The translate. But it's also has yellow flowers. And then I just planted one very recently that is called Amber Queen.
Ooh.
And it is a large spurred Epimedium.
Okay.
And the color on the leaves, when they first come out, they're sort of more elongated leaves.
Okay.
They're arrow-shaped leaves, basically. Low to the ground, perhaps about eight inches above the ground. They're sort of clump forming. So you get lots of these arrow-shaped leaves on kind of airy stems. And Amber Queen has patterned foliage when it first emerges.
Okay.
It has these lovely amber-colored speckles all over it. And then the flowers themselves are sort of more ambery yellow, and they have long spurs. They're very decorative.
Okay, and that's nice to have a foliage color in the shade, isn't it?
Absolutely. Foliage is really the way to go, mm-hmm. I believe, in a shady garden, because unless you are lucky to have moist shade,
mm-hmm.
In a dry garden particularly, you usually sacrifice the flowers.
Yes.
They're not as floriferous. They're not as flowery. They don't produce as many flowers.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, definitely go with the texture. So that's great. Thank you, Helen.
Okay, so the next on the hit parade are hellebores.
Ah.
Helleborus.
Okay.
They are particularly notable because even though they're spring flowering, the part of the plant that is the flower is not the showy part.
Mm.
The showy part is a bract that persists on the plant even after the flowers have been pollinated. So it almost seems as if you've got a month or more of flowers on your hellebores. And hellebores are coming in many more reliable mm-hmm. colors, many more patterned leaves. Some leaves have red veining, some leaves have white veining. And then there are some, like the ill-named, well, perhaps overly descriptive, stinking hellebore, have, they're fairly finely cut leaves, And so they make an interesting texture in the garden. Yeah. So hellebores, just for their long blooming period, and again, because they, the main flowering for them is early in the summer, it gives you that display before the leaves emerge on the trees.
Okay. And they have a nice, quite a substantial leaf on them too, don't they?
They do. They have a let's say, lobed leaves. They're mm-hmm. called palmate, almost like a chestnut leaf, you know?
Yes.
Multiple lobes in it.
Yeah.
So they're a very nice contrast against, and they can be kind of leathery, mm-hmm. and they stand up. What happens is the old leaves die. They may look kind of brown and frostbitten over winter. You cut off last year's leaves in the spring, being okay. careful not to cut off any of the emerging flowering buds. And the buds themselves are starting to appear. They call it, in some cases, Lenten rose or Christmas rose, mm-hmm. Lent being Easter. It is a... well, it's not Easter, but it's around Easter time. Mm-hmm. That's how early some of them in mild climates can emerge.
Wow.
So I saw some at the Toronto Botanical mm-hmm. Garden after a really mild winter last year. We've had two mild winters in a row.
Yeah.
And they were blooming in January, February.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, mine were as well, and I know they're very popular, anyone who goes to the Canada Blooms, right? Because they tend to see them everywhere because they're easy to get blooming. That's almost like their natural time to bloom, so they're not as
exactly.
forced as
yep.
some of the other plants. So there's, yeah.
And they'll stand up to the 10 days, mm-hmm. the 10-day show without having to replace them too much. Yes,
yeah.
exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, people sort of say, oh, why so many hellebores? But... yeah, you've just described the reason for it.
Yeah, yeah, it just works. So so definitely, I definitely need more of those in my garden. So I have them in a different shady part, but not in my dry shade garden. So that's good to know that they'll hold up to the dry shade.
They do. They definitely do. I have about four or five different cultivars in my front garden with, you know, some of them are doubles, some of them are polka-dotted flowers. Some of them are pink. So, and one of the ones that I have is Pink Frost,
okay.
which was a very popular one at Canada Blooms a number of years ago. But there's a reason for it. Hellebore flowers traditionally, in their natural state, tend to be sort of nodding, downward facing.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
some of the newer cultivars like Pink Frost, the flowers are more outward. So you can be standing up and looking at them and enjoying the flowers
yeah.
instead of having them, you know, shy, facing
yes.
the ground, looking at their feet.
Yeah, they're a little bit more showy. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
excellent.
So those are kind of traditional, you know, garden plants, sort of more in the English garden school. But
mm-hmm.
I thought I'd mention that there are some native plants that work well in
okay.
dry shade.
Excellent.
And I think that one of them is the zigzag goldenrod.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a lower growing goldenrod, and it's not showy like the ones you find growing wild in fields. It tends to have flower on more of a spike, so you see little tiny yellow flowers appearing at zigzag intervals along a tall spike. And the great thing about this goldenrod, well, there are a couple of great things about this goldenrod. One, its leaves are easy to distinguish from the weedy goldenrod
okay.
that, you know, self-plants itself in your garden.
Okay.
And they're more heart-shaped. They're shorter and more heart-shaped leaves. And so when you see them first emerging, they don't look like the elongated Canada goldenrod that can be so weedy. The other great thing about it is pollinators love it.
Oh, that's good to know. And when would it bloom, Helen? What time of year does it bloom?
Well, it's starting to bloom right now.
Oh, okay.
So the other things were spring flowering, mm-hmm. for the most part, although the big root geranium blooms in summer. But this is a late summer, just like regular goldenrod, around the same time.
Excellent.
So it's something that you can put into your garden and have it be, you know, have some interest in later in the season.
So Matthew's just pulled up a picture of it here. So, yeah, it has really interesting leaves.
Yeah. I did a little on our Toronto Gardens Facebook page. I posted a little video on the zigzag goldenrod, and it is, you can see that the bees are just loving it.
Excellent. Well, that's great to know that we can, especially if people want to help the pollinators, and if all they have are dry shade, then that's great. That's a great option.
Yeah, there are other native plants for dry shade, and one of them is the big leaf aster. It has, again, a short leaf that is similar in shape, actually, to the zigzag goldenrod, and the flower clusters are not as showy. They're more delicate. But it planted in mass, it can be a nice thing for a woodland garden, like a more naturalized woodland garden. So there are options for dry shade that's among native plants.
Okay.
And the very last category, I think I'm actually giving you a bonus one here, for the dry shade situation, is that there are small bulbs, again, going back to the spring season, mm-hmm. that naturalize in the garden, but not in an aggressive way.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking particularly of Chinodoxa, which is the glory of the snow, it's called. And it comes in white, pink, and blue. And they will self-seed, but, you know, in a way that's not like the scillas,
okay.
the blue mm-hmm. Siberian squill that just tend to blanket a whole area in blue. They just self-seed in a pleasant little way.
Okay.
And they, again, they get their reproductive business out of the way early in the year, so that makes them a good choice. As a matter of fact, any plant for a dry shade situation that either has a tough root or it flowers and produces its life cycle early in the season can be good choices for dry shade.
Okay. Excellent. And this is a type of bulb that we would plant in the fall?
Yeah, you would plant them anytime soon.
Okay.
You can usually get them in little packages. So Glory of the Snow or Chinodoxa, Chinodoxa. It is it's about the height of a, let's say, a muscari or grape hyacinth.
Yeah.
And it has sort of open clusters of little bells, similar to a scilla. As a matter of fact, they're cousins of the scillas.
Okay, okay.
But they are a little less aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a great tip because I think a lot of people, you know, mourn the fact that they can't plant bulbs or like can't plant tulips and daffodils, you know. And so knowing that there is a bulb that will provide them that bright pink, you know, or pink, white, whatever the color is, bright spring color. I think that's I like the fact that they naturalize. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, they can plant tulips. Daffodils, not so much, but they can plant tulips, but if they just think of them as annuals, which is what I do, I plant tulips in a well-drained situation like I have with a sandy soil. I usually blow my brains out with tulips every year because my garden is primarily a spring garden, and there are ones that do come back. I plant enough for me and enough for the squirrels. And when I'm planting them, I use the Aptisol pelletized hen manure to disguise the smell of the overturned earth to prevent them from digging up the bulbs.
And that works for you?
It has worked almost infallibly for me for the last 5 years.
There you go. Good to know, Matthew.
Good to know. That's a great tip.
And so I do plant tulips, but they will tend to run down over time. Mm. They won't, of course, naturalize the way some people talk about naturalizing bulbs in certain situations, especially daffodils. I've had terrible luck with daffodils. Mm. But these guys will self-seed, and that's the difference.
Okay. Excellent.
I have one more plant, if you want.
Oh, sure. If you've got one more, I think this is definitely a bonus show. So excellent, Helen. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the other last category of plants, especially in a shady garden, is an excellent choice, I think, is coral bells, Heuchera.
Yeah, okay.
And not all Heucheras are drought tolerant, but the more recently developed and introduced ones tend to be more reliable in a droughty situation.
Okay.
And the great thing is that they are providing foliage color and interest, which is so useful in a shady garden where you're not expecting lots of flowers. So I have some caramel, which look good. I've got some of a variety of red-leafed ones that I like to kind of weave through the garden. The newer cultivars of Heucheras do tend to be more tougher.
Okay.
And they do give you that wonderful foliage color.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
So that's my bonus.
Excellent. Well, thank you. I think Matthew's going to ask you about...
Yeah, have you had any experience with, like, the Heucherellas and the Tiarellas as well in the dry shade?
I find that Tiarella, because of the root competition, it tends to run down.
Mm-hmm.
I have had Tiarella, and also the same with Heucherella, which is a cross between Tiarella and Heuchera. They don't tend to be quite as let's say reliable as the Heucheras do. But if I had not made the huge mistake of planting periwinkle, perhaps the ground would have been more, let's say, easier to amend in the area where the Tiarella was originally growing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any tips for us as far as your experience on what you do to amend the soil?
Yep, I do. I am the kind of person, when everyone else is putting their leaves out on the curb, I'm raking mine onto the garden. I have a leaf shredder, and I save all the leaves for the garden.
Okay.
I amend my soil every spring with duck manure.
Ooh. Okay.
And I think those two things really have made a difference to my dry shade garden.
Excellent. Well, those are two really good tips.
Yeah, I love that you do the leaf thing too.
Leave the leaves.
Yep, the leaves are awesome.
But you do shred them, though, right? Because I know I've done that in the past, but I didn't shred them. And so then in the spring, I get, you know, clumps and clumps of non-decomposed leaves, which,
yeah. Yeah, I don't always shred them, though, Joanne, because sometimes I'm just too lazy.
Mm.
And our next door neighbors had a baby a little while back, and so I didn't want to, you know, leaf shredder can send like a leaf blower at times.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you're shredding 14 bags of leaves, it can go on for a long time.
Yeah.
So while the baby was, you know, developing her nap cycle, I just put them right on. And then in the spring, I just kind of fluff them up. And if I know there's a crown of a plant trying to emerge, yeah, I just pull it back gently. And believe me, even the unshredded leaves are gone, okay, by, you know, probably midsummer. Yeah. Because the worms come and they pull, mm-hmm, them into the soil, and yeah, they do a lot of work for me.
Yeah, well, that's a great tip. Definitely. And duck manure, that's a good one.
The last tip is the soaker hose.
Ah, yes.
Mm-hmm. But just be careful not to put your spade through it, as I just did.
Oh, gosh.
Oops.
Well, I knew what I did. I discovered as I tried to move mine this year to a newer, yeah, I had it in an established area that I wasn't really using it anymore. Like, it kind of, yeah, gotten, because I didn't need to keep watering that area. So this year when I planted a different area, I went to move the soaker hose, but I think I'd buried it and plants had grown. So like when I went to pull, it basically pulled in half. So the roots of some, I think the roots of my Japanese maple kind of, you know, encompassed my soaker, end of my soaker hose. So
yeah,
that's another thing you can do. So definitely.
Yes,
definitely.
And a timer on it. Mm-hmm. So that you don't forget that it's on.
That's right. That's right.
So there you go.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think this is really great. Lots of good tips and definitely some ones that I hadn't thought of. So so our listeners, where can our listeners find you?
I'm sorry, where can you find me?
Yeah, you're at your blog is torontogardens.com.
Torontogardens.com. We are try and post once or twice a week on things that are either of interest to us or interest to anyone who might have the kind of city garden. We talk sometimes about things that aren't in Toronto, mm-hmm, but we also try and make sure that whatever we talk about is going to be useful for someone who's gardening in our zone and our area.
Yes, just like we do here on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So, what tricks? What plants do you guys try in dry shade?
I think the one that's, I took a picture of mine. I tweeted it out a little earlier, just before the show, about how sad mine kind of looks right now. But so I tend to have things that just really need that pampering, and especially since we did have quite a warm or a wet spring, they're really showing their unhappiness right now.
Yeah.
And the one that it's gone completely out of my head. Oh my goodness, it's tall and it's got the heart shape. Oh my goodness, the name of it. Nope, Matthew's looking at me.
I put you on the spot.
You did. You put me on the spot, but that's okay. Oh my goodness,
heart shaped flowers.
Yes,
heart shaped bleeding heart.
No, it's not bleeding heart. Oh my goodness, sounds like. Matthew, what about you?
One of the plants that people are often surprised that I grow in dry shade is the Annabelle hydrangea.
Mm.
Yes, I have those growing in my dry shade garden.
Yeah, mine are not happy.
Yeah, well, mine are sometimes quick to melt in a dry spot, but they revive quickly, and I've had Annabelle growing and spreading in for about more than 20 years.
Ooh, wow, that's great. That's great.
So. Anyway,
the one I was I showed Matthew the picture. What's it called?
Yeah, Solomon Seal.
Solomon Seal.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Yes.
Solomon Seal. Yeah, especially the Japanese one.
Yeah.
The variegated one.
Yes, that's what I have, is the variegated one, and it's doing quite well.
Yeah. Yeah, it spreads happily.
I think one common thing is people think, when they think of shade or dry shade or they clump shade together, they think of hostas as the best option.
Yes.
And they really struggle, don't they?
Well, the few hostas, the kind I've heard them described as the kind with blue waxy leaves,
mm-hmm,
I have a few that are slower growing. One is Tokidama and the other one is Elegans. And they both are heart-shaped blue waxy leaves, and they tend to be a little bit more resilient to a dry shade situation.
Mm-hmm.
But many plants will expire over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes if they just become too choked with the root competition and they start to shrink, the earth starts to receive them.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to dig them up, break up the the competing or competing roots. Competing, that's a new word. I just made it up. Roots, and then replant and give them another chance.
Excellent. So, okay.
We need to intervene on occasion.
Yes, we definitely do. Well, thank you very much, Helen.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And enjoy your trip. I know you're headed off to a trip tomorrow. So
yes, I am.
Excellent.
We're going to Ireland.
Oh, well, you enjoy that. And thank you for making time for us, I'm sure, in your busy schedule for helping us learn more about dry shade.
Pleasure.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. There's some great options. I'm really excited about the zigzag goldenrod to have a pollinator, you know, growing now.
Exactly. Yeah. A beautiful little plant that we looked that one up too. And
yeah,
that's very exciting.
So hopefully our listeners, I don't know if our listeners, we didn't really talk to you to see if you had any questions or have any successes or, so we can definitely, you can bring that up to us next week. If there's more questions about dry shade. Time flies. Every time. We just can't get over. So next week is the last week in August. So what does that mean?
That means it's our September show. So join us next week while we talk about everything you can do or don't do in your September garden. Who looks hot? Who's not?
That's right. Excellent. And thank you for listening to the show tonight. Once again, check out downtoearth.ca with the number 2. All of our, you know, social media links are there. You can sign up for my seasonal tips guide and my monthly newsletter. Please follow along with me on social media, Instagram, Twitter. Again, you can check out that I tweeted out the picture of my dry shade garden that's kind of struggling along under my 2 Crimson King maples. So thank you for joining us down the garden path.
Thanks, everyone. And you were listening to Down the Garden Path on Reality Radio 101.
Thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path with your hosts Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing, right here on Reality Radio 101.